This week on Pop of Culture, we check out a film festival.
So the initial concept of it was to be a downtown walking film festival that celebrated film and our community.
Later, we'll ask comedian Nagin Farsad about her tour across the country.
There's this big, you know, discourse among everywhere you go, that America's divided, that Americans don't like each other. But my experience as a comedian that's literally performed everywhere is that is not at all the case.
That and more coming up.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Join us at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer. This week, listening back to some of our favorite conversations from recent shows. To start, the Victory International Film Festival is in Evansville, September 12th through the 14th. Our co-host Michelle Kinsey spoke to festival director Matthew Alm back in May.
So tell us about all things Victory. How did this start, Matt?
It actually was born out of another festival that we had here in Evansville called the Alhambra Theater Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And the Alhambra is another historic theater that is here in Evansville. And there was a group of people that were trying to support its renovation. And that ran its course and the festival ended. And so there was a core group of us, Roger McGarry, Josh Weiland, and I, that thought that we needed to bring another international film festival back. And so in the fall of 2018, we got together and the first festival was in September of 2019.
Awesome. So I'm guessing that Victory is another historic theater in Evansville?
It certainly is. The Victory Theater is actually a grand old movie palace. It actually began as a vaudeville palace as well.
Oh, wow.
That was built downtown in 1921. And I believe it was only the quote unquote Victory for about 5 or 6 years. And then it was bought out by Lowe's, which of course is a big theater chain. Mm-hmm. And they held on to it until the 70s. And then it became sort of a mixed use facility and began to deteriorate a little bit. And then the city and the county got together in the late 90s and renovated it. I believe they lost a few hundred seats to modernization, but it's a 1900 seat theater in downtown Evansville. Our symphony plays there and a lot of great acts will come in over the course of the year.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how long have you been having the film festival there, the International Film Festival?
We started in 2019. We took a year off for the pandemic, of course, but this is technically our fifth year. We've only had four festivals during that time, but we're just going to gloss over the fact. And then I think we're just going to forget that COVID year.
Yes.
And move forward.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So how has the festival changed over the years, Matt?
It's actually, because of its footprint, has not changed a whole lot. But when we decided to organize it, one of the things that we love about our downtown, as is happening with a lot of communities across America, is we have a very strong Chamber of Commerce in downtown Evansville that has revitalized our downtown district. So the initial concept of it was to be a downtown walking film festival that celebrated film and our community. And because of that, we only have a certain number of large venues, so we do a smaller multi-venue for most of the festival. We've traditionally opened up in the Victory, but then we go to Encounter Church, Innovation Point, and WNIN for our smaller screening spaces for the film festival proper.
Oh, I love that idea. I love the idea that you're kind of bouncing around to different venues to check out films. That's a great idea. Well, I know that you have several categories in the International Film Festival. Can you tell us about some of those?
Certainly. We keep it pretty straightforward. So we have a feature film category, a short film category, student films for our college, elementary, high school, junior. I say elementary. I don't think we've ever gotten an elementary. We're certainly open to the idea. Kids are getting very sophisticated
That's
with their
right.
content creation. So if there are any elementary school students that are listening to this, either themselves or with their parents, we'd love to see you submit. But then also a Hoosier-made film category. As a Hoosier Film Festival and also having a film background myself, we want to make sure that we have a way to recognize our Hoosier filmmakers.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. I understand you are still taking submissions for this year's festival. How does one enter their work?
You can either go straight to our website, which is victoryiff.com, or you can skip the middleman and go to filmfreeway.com/victoryiff, and you'll learn all about the festival, you'll learn about our cash prizes, and how to submit.
And the deadline for submission is when?
Our regular deadline is May 31st. Late deadline is July 1st.
Okay. And when is the festival? And can you kind of paint the picture for me of that that weekend?
Certainly. It's going to be September 12th through the 14th, mm-hmm. which is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it'll be Thursday evening, Friday evening, then all day on Saturday. We're going to have an event on Friday night that we're very happy to be hosting. One of the producers of the Blair Witch Project, Greg Hale, is actually from Henderson, Kentucky, across the river from us. So we're going to fly him back in to do a 25th anniversary screening of the Blair Witch Project on Friday the 13th.
Wow.
So he'll be
that
there.
That timing, it could not be better. Yeah.
It was actually quite excellent that that fell together. We often feel we're glad that sort of those things happen. But yes, but then the rest of it will just be films from around the world. We've had 46 submissions so far from 7 different countries. We generally get around 100, but you generally start seeing more trickle in as that regular deadline starts approaching. And then we'll go through our process of getting the best films possible to put on that slate. And we'll be showing them all day on Saturday the 14th downtown.
Wonderful. What do you think makes your film festival unique?
What has been really gratifying from the outset is the number of filmmakers from outside of our city and even outside of our state that mm-hmm. join us for this. We always have a robust slate of educational workshops and panels to present to people. And so it's nice to have those filmmakers as a resource to present that educational information, but then also just having the networking time, because part of this is to also educate our community on what film is.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I realized when we first started putting this together, the biggest question that I got from a lot of people is, what is a film festival? Hmm. And having been a film guy for so long, it hurt to hear that. And the only thing that I could come up with after a while is like, well, what if I were to tell you that I was having a hot dog festival? What would you expect to be there? And they were like, hot dogs. I was like, so a film festival, like there to be films. So it's been good for us to expose the community and working with our local arts council to bring this opportunity to our neighbors, to expose them to not only films from around the world, but just film in general.
I love that. I love that. And chances are, if you go to the film festival, you are going to see something unlike you've ever seen before. Tell us about your love of film. Do you recall the movie that started it all for you?
I mean, I grew up on movies like Airplane and Blazing Saddles. And my mother loved old like Flash Gordon serials and Topper and Citizen Kane, things like that. Yes. So it reaches so far back that I don't know if I could tell you the first thing that I saw that really embedded me in that love of film. People ask me all the time, what's your favorite film? And I usually have to break it down by genre because I can't pick just one as my tip top.
Sure. Absolutely. I totally get that. And when you said Airplane, Airplane and The Jerk are probably the two movies that for the longest time they were the most quoted. I mean, I could always be counted on for a hat, a brooch, a pterodactyl. Yeah.
It's interesting to me too when you talk to younger people at the festival, and I am kind of a Rolodex of those kinds of quips and quotes, mm-hmm. and I will trot something out and they'll be like, what is that? And I love being able to say, that is from Airplane. And if you haven't seen it, you don't know comedy.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So what do you hope visitors to the film festival get out of the experience?
I think the thing that we have always wanted for people is to just have a very enjoyable time. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, I believe, especially since they've start putting in these large Barca loungers into our local Cineplexes, which I love, but it adds even more space to what was already somewhat of an insular experience. Mm-hmm. What I like about our festival is that as you leave the screening rooms to, like we said, walk to that next one, you're traveling with other people that just went through that experience with you. So we see a lot of organic conversations that pop up with people that don't even know one another about what they just saw. And so I want people to walk away with not only a different experience on how they've seen film, but also how they express it to others.
Oh, I love that. So remind us one more time, where can they get more information on the festival? What are the dates and anything else you want people to know before they get in the car and drive down to Evansville?
Definitely. So you can either go to victoryiff.com, which is our festival website, or filmfreeway.com/victoryiff. Both of those have a wealth of information about how to enter into the festival, but also how to get your tickets for the festival. As far as what I would want people to know is Evansville is a very welcoming community. We've gotten a lot of feedback from those filmmakers that have joined us from all other places just to say how unique of a downtown we have and how special of an experience that it was for them. And I would just hope that people will come join us and enjoy a lot of great film from all over the globe.
Wonderful. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Matthew Ulm is the festival director for the Victory International Film Festival in Evansville, and we spoke to him in May. You're listening to Pop of Culture, and I'm Jen Blackmer. In July, we attended the Great American Punchline Tour, where comedians asked the question, is the solution to America's polarization problem jokes? Our co-host Michelle Kinsey got some answers, starting with executive producer Katie Borum.
Okay, Katie, so tell me, what are we doing here?
So this is the Muncie, Indiana stop for the Great American Punchline Comedy Tour, produced by Good Laugh, which is a program of the Center for Media and Social Impact, based in Washington, D.C. at American University. And really, we created this comedy show based on our own research and practice and belief that comedy is one of the special cultural forces that actually manages to bring all different kinds of people together. When we do a lot of serious work about comedy and human rights, or just comedy and like really basic civil dialogue, and a lot of times, I think it's like a gotcha question that people want to ask, like, what is it about comedy? How do you do, can we take comedy seriously? And we say, of all the cultural art forms at our disposal, comedy doesn't, because comedy is in all of us and we all have like a funny uncle or grandma or crazy funny dad or whatever, we can really actually all connect on that level. And the idea that we only make rational, deliberative decisions through sort of news sources alone is not, we humans are emotional creatures. And when we laugh together, I like to say that there are a lot of art forms that give us empathy. And I think comedy gives us solidarity. Comedy is not just saying, I feel really bad for that person and I'm kind of glad I'm not them. Comedy says, wow, you're different from me, but we're kind of the same in our basic human flaws. And that solidarity to me feels more powerful for coming together and solving our shared problems than just empathy, right? I mean, by the way, love empathy, don't hate empathy. But solidarity says we're actually the same.
So the ultimate question, I think, why Muncie, Indiana?
Well, Muncie, Indiana is one of the great original American cities. It was a titan of manufacturing. It was a really important place in American history. And often places like Muncie, Indiana are not visited as much, right? And so the Great American Punchline Tour is actually going right through the middle of the country into all kinds of communities that are like Muncie, Indiana. And we like the history of General Motors being here and the many people in the community sort of reinventing what Muncie is going to be for the future. And I'm not going to lie, we also like knowing that Garfield was from Muncie, because obviously we discovered that. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah. And David Letterman went to school right down the street, Ball State University.
I forgot about that. Oh my God, that's amazing. Well, one of the greats. Yeah. I mean, also, why not Muncie, right?
Exactly. We are Middletown, USA,
yeah,
after all.
Everyone is so friendly here. It feels like this is a place that knows how to play, knows how to have a good time. And we've been really moved, especially being here at the Muncie Common Market. This is such an incredible community place where people show up to take care of one another. And that really is... You know, our show is funny and sometimes it's raunchy because it is comedy and we don't believe in censoring comedians. But also it's the spirit of bringing people together in a place where all kinds of community people come together. Like today we spent the day here and we met community health workers, the local social workers, the local professor who created the business plan for the urban farm, and Mike who runs the place, who's a musician. It's just an incredible spot. And, you know, we all live, all the comedians are from different places around the country, from 7 different states. And we, the producers, are all from different places. And what we've been talking about all day is how much we wish we had a place like this in our places where we live. Because this is a little bit non-existent in many urban places that sometimes we hold up as being the United States, but not really, right? It's really all of us.
Hi, everybody. I'm going to be your host for this evening. My name is Nagin Farsad. Hello. Hi.
Oh, my gosh. What a pleasure. I'm so sweaty. I'm sorry, Nagin.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, just
nice to meet you.
I am thrilled to meet you.
Nagin, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Okay, so first of all, I understand that you are serving as MC.
Correct.
For this this evening. Talk to me about kind of your approach, your whole approach to emceeing an event such as this.
Oh, you know, the MC is in many ways the most important role. No, it's I love emceeing because my whole feeling about like a show is that this is a party. Everyone is invited. I want everyone to have a good time. I want it to feel fast. I want it to feel like when you finish the show, you're like, oh my God, I want more show. Like I want all, the audience to have all those feelings, and I feel like, you know, an MC gets to kind of like set the pace, you know, get a little, you know, Usain Bolt into the show, you know what I mean? And that's what I try to do. I'm not saying I do it every time, but that's what I try to do.
Goals. There are goals
yeah, exactly,
involved.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
I understand you just started this round in Milwaukee, so you've already done a show in Milwaukee. Tell me how that went. How did it feel? What was the response? What was the feedback?
Well, this is a really unique show because we basically rounded up like the most like diverse group of comedians, and by diverse I mean we all represent like totally weird, quirky subsets of the American population. We are like literally the thing that makes this, you know, we're the like the Keep America Bizarre faction of America, right?
Yeah.
Like the what you love about how strange America can be, like that is what I feel like this collection of comedians represents. And so I feel like, you know, we had this really great show in Milwaukee. We're gearing up for another one here in Muncie, Indiana. And I think people like to see this kind of like country sort of reflected back at them in the form of comedians. You know what I mean? So it's a good, I think it's a good time. You hear, you know, between the six of us, like, you know, I grew up in California. You know, there are people from New Jersey. There are people from Alabama. There are people from Georgia. Like it is an extremely mixed, geographically mixed group of people that have just like a wide range of stories from the urban to the rural, to the like anything in between. And so I you don't often see that on shows, and I think that's what's kind of really special about it.
I'm assuming there wasn't arm twisting involved to get you to participate in this, but why personally, why did you feel like this was something you wanted to do?
My whole feeling is like, you know, I have performed all over the country as a stand-up comedian. I think 48 states, no, 49 states. I've also performed in Hawaii and Alaska. I'm looking at you. And I feel like, you know, there's this big, you know, discourse among everywhere you go that America's divided, that Americans don't like each other. But my experience as a comedian that's literally performed everywhere is that is not at all the case. Whenever I go somewhere, I am embraced. People are really delightful. They're really nice. They like like to laugh. They like to tell me what food to buy in their hometown. You know what I mean? And so I want to be a part of like changing the discourse that we're so divided. We are actually not so divided. Like, I don't think we should let these like political wedge issues make us believe that, you know, we're not. And so being able to be a part of a comedy tour like this, it's really trying to bring people together is what, yeah, like you're absolutely right. There was no arm twisting involved at all. Like, I believe in it really strongly.
When it's all said and done tonight and you say goodnight to everybody, what do you want people to walk away with?
I mean, I just want people to kind of have that warm and fuzzy feeling about their neighbors. You know what I mean? Like, we're all in this together. And I want people to feel like they had a good time, they had a laugh, they heard some perspectives maybe they hadn't heard before. I'm Muslim. If you never had a Muslim friend before, let me be your first Muslim friend. You know, yeah, I want the warm and gooeys, and I want those warm and gooeys to extend into everyday life.
I'm already feeling the warm and gooeys. Thank you so much, Nagin. Really appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
The Great American Punchline Tour rolled through the Common Market in Muncie on July 8th. The event was recorded, and producers hope to share it with a larger audience in the future.
It is finally the weekend of the Butter Arts Fair. We thought it'd be appropriate this week to listen back to part of our Conversation Between the Coast with Molly Bacon, co-founder and executive director of Gang Gang, the creative agency that runs Butter. Let's join that conversation.
What would you say to a young artist who comes to you for the first time? Like, what advice would you give them regarding, I think, how to become either a part of your network or how to begin to establish a career? What kind of things would you say?
I say, does anybody have a business card?
And do they have business cards?
I say that to my team. After today's lecture, there were so many young artists around and so many people that seemed kind of attracted to Gang Gang, because we are just kind of a hub of creative thinkers. And I remember Carrie Kirshner on our team once said that we are a factory of creative ideas. So that's what Gang Gang feels like. And just even by way of the word gang, you know, which is people on a journey together, I think people are subconsciously just kind of like attracted to us that are on the same type of journey. So a lot of students today said, you know, I'm studying this, I'm figuring out what to do after, da 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 da. And my response is, come intern at Gang Gang, you know, like, come find a job, come think with us, come learn with us, let's ask questions together. We have a directory of artists online that that we use for our programs, that we use for booking, and that we like to lift up. But we are just a very big community of artists and creative entrepreneurs, and we motivate, inspire, and help each other create. And I think that's the beauty of probably the arts sector at large. Like, it just needs another person. It just needs another yes. And I guess I'm humble and proud that we've been able to be a yes to a lot of people. And so I'd say, come find out what we can say yes to.
That's excellent. What kinds of artists do you work with? Are they mostly visual artists, or do you have writers, singers, performers?
I'm trying to think of a type of artist that we do not work with or have not worked with.
And if one of those types of artists happens to be listening, you know,
then come join the gang.
Exactly.
No, we work with artists of all kinds, all types. I have just recently become comfortable even maybe calling myself an artist as a writer. And so just to include everyone, literary artists and performing artists and visual artists and sculptors and illustrators and designers, it's all about spreading the message and on different platforms and different disciplines. So, yes.
It's very refreshing to have this conversation and hear so much about community and networking and making connections, because as I'm a writer as well, and I feel as though I spend the majority of my time alone working on whatever I'm working on, my projects, what have you. And I know, but that's terrible.
Why?
I mean, it's great to be alone, but it's also, I think we sometimes deprive ourselves of community, right? Because we think of the work of the artist as solitary in whatever way. And so this to me sounds like just a wonderful place to come and connect creatively with others.
Right. Yeah. Creativity breeds creativity, like smiles, you know, and like laughter. And so that is exactly what happens. And it actually can be maybe overwhelming for writers and thinkers and planners like me.
Sometimes it is good to wish for more time alone, so you can sort of sort through all of the stuff, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's funny because there is, I think, a tension in modern life that is all about like all of the things we have to do versus all of the things we want to do,
or get to do,
and in terms of, you know, disconnecting so that you can in fact get some perspective and either make art or tell stories, right?
Right.
So I'm very excited about this type of an idea and this type of a community-based model.
Yeah, thank you.
What would you say to others, somebody who's listening, because we do actually, the show is based in Central Indiana, but we have a podcast version that is national. So if somebody's hearing this, say, I don't know, in Denver or in Abilene, Texas, and they want to do something similar, what would you say?
Oh my gosh, I would say invite us over for a field trip. We love taking field trips to other communities, other cities, to share what we've learned in Indiana, you know, to share what we've tried and tested in Indianapolis for the last 4 years that has been working. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a new narrative in Central Indiana. We're a new cultural destination. There's a difference that you can kind of feel on the ground. The programming is different, and it's something that we are testing in other markets. Mm-hmm. And so if other cities are listening, absolutely invite us over and let's see what we can dream up.
I grew up here. Actually, I grew up in a small town about 30 miles east of Indianapolis, and comparing the opportunities to experience art and connect with art in Indy compared to when I was growing up the difference is just legion. And it makes me wonder if this work was going on when I was younger and just nobody knew about it, or they didn't know how to connect with each other and now it's different, or if there is a sort of new cultural
Renaissance.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, in Indianapolis in particular, because it seems to be working.
You know, I think it's a little bit of both, but heavier on the latter. Mm-hmm. I've always been the contradiction to there's nothing going on in Indianapolis, like, you know, 10,
always.
15, 20
yes.
years ago. That was a narrative, you know, that
of
was
course.
A thing.
Yeah.
And without social media, you know, it's like passing around flyers, like putting up, like literally printing things or texting graphics. And so just the environment, like social media, like the world, everything is different. And so that is helping to connect. But there's also more activity. There's also a little bit more infrastructure. There's more attention on the arts in Indianapolis. And I think that we've seen an incredible turnaround just in the last decade, and certainly mm-hmm. within the last 5 years.
Sure. And how about audiences? Do you find audiences are coming out more and more?
Interesting question in a post-COVID world.
Tell me about it.
You know, if I think about like Butter, what we've already done, and then I Made Rock and Roll, which is coming up. It's a new rock fest that we're doing in May in the middle of downtown Indianapolis. And so that's the question we're asking ourselves. What about the audience? And I think people right now are looking for these kind of new opportunities, new ways that feel like fun, free, but also for a cause mm-hmm. or for a mission or for something beyond or bigger than themselves. And that's a really unique niche that is wanting to come out and connect.
Sure. Oh, that's excellent. So what's the future? What do you, you know, you've been around for 4 years, and obviously I think the need was definitely there, and you're building on something really incredible. What do you want to have happen? What's the next 5 years look like?
World domination.
It's okay. I'm along for the ride, so we'll go.
You know, we have been piloting a thing in Indianapolis. We have, you know, boldly said, and Central Indiana Community Foundation with us 4 years ago said that we wanted to make Indianapolis the most equitable city. You know, and so we're still on that mission, and the work that that you know, Gang has kind of done and sparked is piloting that effort in such a way that it does feel like we can respond to the new markets that are asking for support. You know, other areas are asking for, like, what did you learn and how did you do it and what does funding look like to, you know?
Yeah.
How do you garner interest from the philanthropic sector and the private sector? I mean, how do you offer a service kind of to both of those worlds? So it is a really unique kind of model towards equitable cities by way of the arts. And we're just starting, like we're just 4 years old, like we're looking for an office, you know?
Oh, sure.
And
yeah.
So this is the beginning. And yeah, I'd say the future looks like, yeah, I think you'll start to see like love-based cities become a thing.
I love that. I did not mean to sound
yeah.
Like- love Bay Cities. I love it. Yes, of course. So I think I'm kind of really entranced by this idea of economic justice for artists. And again, I've come back to this again, but there's this notion of an artist needs to be willing to sacrifice, needs to be willing to starve, to give up all of the I'll say comforts of, mm-hmm. You know, existence, like a house and, mm-hmm. and things that should be, you know, and healthcare,
yeah.
and things that should be a part of everyday life anyway. And what do you say to that?
I'd say, what did we do?
I know. What did we do
How
wrong?
How did we create a society that doesn't honor the people who built it? I mean, like, we're talking about monuments and cathedrals and, like, beauty and landscaping around us, and yet we didn't put them into the infrastructure.
Right.
And we said that they should starve, or that, like, that could kind of be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's opting out of that. It's right. saying that doesn't make sense. That's no longer a model, because now, like, we will acknowledge the value and the worth of these creators that are making our lives better. You know, they're making our lives better.
Oh, gosh. All right. I could keep going. I mean, do you have a something that you would like me to ask that you Ooh. Want the world to know about your work?
About my work?
Or the world of East Central Indiana, I should say.
If anything, I would offer gratitude to the network around Gang, gratitude to Ball State, gratitude to you for, I guess, being open to this conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, I am so grateful that you took some time to come and talk with us today. Please check out gangculture.com. And definitely check out I Made Rock and Roll, as well as the Butter Arts Fair Labor Day weekend.
Yep. Butterfineartfair.com. Butterartfair.com.
That was part of our conversation with Gang, co-founder and executive director Molly Bacon. Gang is the creative agency behind Butter Arts Fair, which is this weekend in Indianapolis. You can hear our full conversation at indianapublicradio.org or on your favorite podcast app. This is Pop of Culture, and I'm Jen Blackmer. This week, we're listening back to some of our favorite recent conversations. Earlier this month, we spoke to Torin Scott, owner of pottery studio Made in Muncie. Our co-host, Michelle Kinsey, asked him, what are you working on?
Joining me in the studio is Torin Scott. Torin, tell us, what are you working on?
Currently, I'm working on a series of ceramic robots. I'm planning to have a show in September, the first Thursday of September over at Gordy's, which is kind of full circle. I worked there before I left for the Navy. And then this new series is clay robots that will be on display September 6th.
I'm Jen Blackmer. Pop of Culture is back after this.
Ceramic pieces that I've thrown on the wheel and then connected into these forms.
Yeah. So what inspired this current show that you're working on, the robots?
Yeah. So the idea of still being functional after damage is kind of what these robots represent. So when I was in the service, I was in an accident and I ended up getting retired from the Navy because of it. And, you know, they had to put me back together. Mm-hmm. And so these robots kind of represent that journey that I took, with my knee and my arm and my face to kind of build me back up. I don't know about the $1 million man, but so these robots kind of represent that path I took recovering from those injuries.
Yeah. How has that kind of helped you recover? Do you find it to be cathartic when you're working on like this particular show with such a personal meaning, a personal impact?
That connection, yeah. So, and the neat thing too for me was after my injuries, it took me a long time to have full function of my hands again, and the wheel actually helped facilitate that. So even before I started working on these robots, it was the clay that kind of brought my strength back in my hands and allowed me to kind of recover from that, you know. And then now, working on them 10 years later, mm-hmm. Has kind of is reflected in all the little bits and bobs that kind of pulled them together is kind of how I look at it, me still being a functional human.
Yeah. And an artist. And that had to be extremely emotional not to be able to do what you loved, which was get your hands in the clay, right?
Yeah, it was a struggle. You know, I was on my back for 9 months.
Wow. What is it about clay that keeps you coming back? How does it make you feel? What is it, what does it do for you that you feel like, you said you've done other things in your life, but you keep coming back to clay? What is it about working with it that brings you joy?
Well, I think that there's a couple different aspects of it that I find intriguing. Mm-hmm. One of them just being the idea that it's just dirt. It's just something that we've dug out of the ground and that we've been making marks on for thousands and thousands of years. But the responsiveness, so every time I put a tool to it, that interaction is permanent. So we're still digging stuff out of the ground from 20,000 years ago that people made. And so that idea that you're creating something, be it functional, a coffee mug or, sculpture or anything of the in-between area, every time you react, the clay also gives you a reaction. And then the other part of it too is that part of it you have to just let happen. So some of it is you got to pray to the kiln gods to have your piece come out okay.
that is so true.
Yeah.
What have been some of the most memorable pieces for you to create?
This is always a great question. For me, it's always the next one. I mean, it's the one that I'm working on currently. The next thing. So everything's additive in craftsmanship, I think, where you learn a little bit of a lesson with each piece. And so my favorite's always going to be the one that's in my brain still that I haven't figured out how to make yet. So I hope that answers the question.
Yeah,
but
it sure does. It sure does. And I would say, that when you said, what's in my brain and how am I going to make that happen? Before we started chatting and being recorded, we were talking about your robot pieces. And our producer, Luke, looked at the picture and said, wait a minute, that's clay? Because they, if you just look at it, it looks like
a robot, metal. I mean, there you really would probably have to touch it to make sure that it is not metal, because the detail that you have in these robot, these clay forms is unbelievable and very realistic and fun. And talk a little bit about, like you said, kind of the trial and error of getting those to look so robot-like, I guess.
Sure. So I got to study under Ted Neal over here at Ball State, yeah. and one of the projects that he gave me a little bit of leeway on, I made this first version of this robot, and I got to use all the amazing kilns there where we're talking about whole different process than what I do down at the studio. But that idea of using the malleability of clay to mimic another type of material was intriguing to me, and I've got to come back to that and explore that. But I took that as an intro class from Ted Neal and have been able to extrapolate from that. But yeah, it's a lot of trial and error of, okay, what mark makes it look like a rivet? What yeah. mark makes it look like a screw? What mark makes it look like a plate that's stuck on, or should it be lifted up? Or, and then on top of all of that, then you also have the glazing aspect of it, of trying to figure out, okay, what mix should I use to make this look metallic or you know, beat up, or
yeah.
you know,
those
kinds
rusty
of things, right?
Yeah, uh-huh.
So yeah, a lot of trial and error, and you know, again, it's always that next one. It's like, oh, I got to try that and that together, you know. So it's a lot of fun.
And you've got to be okay with failure, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, there's some of the early robots that I look at and I go, "Oh, yeah, you're going to sit on the back of the shelf because that was a good attempt, but not what I was after."
No one will see you yes. again.
Yeah. I'm on the 15th one. So, you wow. know, the first few were a little rough, we'll say.
Well, we cannot wait to see them all. How many pieces are you creating, or are you planning on creating for the September exhibit?
I think we're shooting for a dozen, anywhere from 10 to 12 that will be on display at Gordy's. Mm-hmm. So,
And before we go, talk a little bit about kind of the breadth of classes that you offer and where people can get more information.
Sure. So again, I'm the owner of Made Muncie Pottery. MadeMuncie.com. You can always sign up for our workshops, do a lesson, come in anytime for the walk-in part, which is any of the glazing. So our hours are listed, and yeah, come find us. For a long time, we were Muncie's best kept secret. We don't want to be a secret anymore. So we're there to help you create memories that last. And I think that's kind of what we're all about. With not only the workshops, the lessons, but also just coming in and glazing something that's going to go on your tree for Christmas, or a tile for a trivet, or a coffee mug that you're going to give to mom for Mother's Day. We'd love to help you create something unique.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Torin, for coming into the studio and telling us about what you're working on.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
I am here with producer Luke Jones, who's joining me for this week's Arts Calendar, the Arts Calendar for the week of August 30th. Are you ready, Luke?
I'm so ready, Jen.
All right, let's kick it off. Friday night, August 30th, brings a European market to Pendleton Avenue in Pendleton. Food and flowers will be available for purchase, and you can see a plein air art demonstration from the Pendleton Artist Society. More information is at pasgallery119.org.
Clue on Stage opens Thursday, September 5th on the Anderson Ming Stage Theater. At the Anderson Ming Stage Theater, maybe. Based on the 1985 Paramount movie, which was inspired by the classic Hasbro board game, the whodunit has Miss Scarlet, Professor Plum, Mrs. White, Mr. Green, Mrs. Peacock, Colonel Mustard, and the butler racing to find a killer.
That's just like the game.
Exactly. Clue on Stage runs through September 15th. Tickets are at mainstagetheater.org.
The Andersontown Powwow is next weekend, Saturday, September 7th and 8th. Everyone is invited to the showcase of Native American culture with dance, music, storytelling, and authentic crafts. We'll have much, much more about the Andersontown Powwow on next week's show, including music from one of the artists we'll be performing.
Ventriloquist Terry Fader will bring his Vegas-style act to the Honeywell Center on Saturday, September 7th. Combining comedy and music, his cast of characters belts their way through rock, country, soul, pop, heavy metal, and Broadway numbers. Tickets are at honeywellarts.org.
What is it about ventriloquism that we just love? I love it.
I was watching some of it prepping for this show. I mean, it looks like the characters are singing.
That's the best. Although interviewing a ventriloquist on radio might be an interesting thought, maybe for the future. Hey, American roots band Low Lily is the next group to step into Pruce Hall for their Coffee and Cabernet series. Low Lily's music is described as the energy of fiddle music, the introspective quality of contemporary folk, the precision of bluegrass, and the drive of Americana. You can enjoy that sound with a selection of wine, craft beer, or coffee. And more information is at bsu.edu/Emmons.
Staying on Ball State's campus and looking well ahead to Thursday, September 19th, we're very excited for Your Brain on Art, part of the Fred Meyer Lecture in Cultural Policy and Arts Advocacy at Ball State University. Authors of Your Brain on Art, Susan Magsiman and Ivy Ross, will discuss the science behind the impact of art on our brains and on our health, and how the arts can build stronger communities. I can't imagine how that would relate to this show at all.
We're going to be there, too, yes, for it. And I have read the book. The book is outstanding. It's outstanding.
I'm so excited. And the Pop of Culture team plans to be there. More information to come.
If you have an event for Pop of Culture listeners that we need to know about, tell us at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations, and by sustaining members of IPR. Join us at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. This week was produced by Luke Jones, who got enough sleep this week to feel like a normal enough person to help me out with this week's arts calendar. Woohoo! Our show is co-hosted by Michelle Kinsey, Kara Duquette, and me, Jen Blackmer. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the campus of Ball State University.